Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. It's hot, and despite all logic, it seems to be somehow getting hotter. Every time I say it can't get no worse, it gets worse. But today we're here to check in with Clayton Batts. Clayton, how's things looking over there on the Chattahoochee River system?
It's hot, but the fish are biting. They're starting to generate some water. The water color looks good. They're schooled up. You can have a good day offshore. You can have a good day shallow right now. They actually got the water level pretty high for us. You can kind of pick your poison. The biggest neck problem I've had is clients that used to be out there all day. They want to call a drip 4 or 5 hours into the drip, say they've caught enough and they're ready to go get some bait.
Yeah, you need to. Man, last year we had the president of Ingles on there, and he was telling me some about their 12-volt battery-powered portable freezers. You need to get you one of them on your bass boat so you can give them guys an ice cream bar or something to help them cool off.
Yeah, I wish they'd come out instead of a speedometer attacking that dog. Plus, from the dash, I wish they'd have 2 AC vents where I could sit behind it. But after I'm out there about every day, so I'm pretty used to it. It's just kind of more of the people that, you know, I mean, it's not their job, and I don't blame them. They're not used to being out in that heat all day, and especially if I get some people from up north 4 or 5 hours, I mean, they're happy. They've caught, you know, 20, 30 fish and a couple of good ones, and they're ready to go to the house. That's right. Yeah. Right now, I did put on my Facebook page that I'm not running any 8-hour trips right now, because even if somebody books it, they're not lasting it, and there's no need to waste the money, because about 11 o'clock, I had a client look at it about a week and a half ago. He was ready to go. He was last cast. He caught like a 4.5-pounder. He looked on his phone. I started idling off. He looked on his phone. He said, how hot it is? He said it was 114 with a heat index out there on the middle of the lake with no wind.
Goodness. Yeah, that's a... Man, I've always, this time of the year, July and August, I tell people invite me to go do something. I'm like, look, man, here's the deal. We're off the water by 10 o'clock. Or we're out. Or if we're in the woods, you want help hanging the stand or something like that? They said, I'll do it in the morning, but we're going to be out there by 9. Like, I'm not going to sit out there and bake, like you said, triple digits out there hanging stands or catching fish, whatever it is, like yard work. If I don't wake up early and do it, it's just going to have to wait another day. It's just too hot to fool with it.
Yeah, I've been recommending 4 or 6 hour in the morning, and then if people want to go in the afternoon, which right now that is your better bite, just go to a 4-hour trip in the afternoon.
Yeah,
and
that's
when you first get out in the afternoon, it is a little hotter, but it breaks pretty fast.
Yeah, it'll cool off, and man, if you're talking about catching 20, 30 fish, I mean, that's still a pretty good fishing trip. And 4 hours, like, that's just more manageable. Like, you're not killing you whole day. That's not a bad gig right there. 4-hour trip. That's not bad at all.
No, we've had some real good 4-hour trips where people after 4 hours, they're really, really happy and they are ready to go to the bank. And that's fine with me. I can put it on trailer and I can go work more mother job.
There we go. Well, tell me, man, you're talking about it's hot, but the bite is hot. What's the secret? Because, like, down here, I actually fished in a kayak tournament for bass. And everybody was doing pretty poorly, blaming it on the heat. I know there was a local crappie tournament that was kind of slow down here. I know that can be a regional thing, but I also know that, just, man, when you see them water temperatures going up, I know a lot of guys struggle. What's your secret right now to getting a bite?
I go deeper, and whenever I pull up a client, I mean, I'm looking at on active target, or I've idled over them. Like, when we pull up, you're not going to, I mean, you're casting to a lot of fish. I mean, you're casting two fish. And the only time that I have trouble with clients not getting bit is they're wanting to go too fast. Right now, when you're throwing in, you know, anywhere from 10 to 40 fish, you're bringing a worm through there, you got to go slow. But you go slower you go, I tell them to put it 4x4. Slower you go, the more you're going to catch. And I think really just being slow and being able to throw into a wad like that, I mean, that really helps. And like I was talking about that afternoon bite, it's been a little better. They're generating current. And if anybody's familiar is listening, familiar with the generator current, or either fish in the ocean when that tide turns, it's the same thing. That water starts moving, they go to bite.
For sure. Yeah, I know, especially when it gets hot, a lot of our water down here, and I hear about it on other reservoirs, you know, you'll get them layers of water that get hypoxic, and just in general, man, like just heat stress, I can see definitely having to slow down a little bit. The few fish that I caught, it was deeper water, and like you said, slow, like not really hopping that worm or anything, just kind of dragging it. And you'd have to, if you found an area that you felt good about, like it was, you know, just stick with it, be patient. You might have to throw it at them 3 or 4 times before they finally could be bothered to hit it.
It's the same thing offshore, even though when you're throwing into those schools, I mean, you, a bunch of people that don't fish much, they think, God, why don't we get bit every cast? You'd be like, well, you got to fire them up. You got to enjoy those 5 or 10 you catch real quick, and we're going to fish another one. You know, just kind of moving around and staying on the fish is the key to it.
You talking about fishing a worm down there? Are you Texas rigging them, Carolina rigging them, drop shot rigging them? What's your preferred presentation this time of the year?
Drop shot and check in. That's my two favorite ones.
There we go.
I got some people that they'll drag a Carolina rig or, you know, anything like that. But as long as your fish is slow through there, you're going to get bit. And
Is there a
about one school during the day, you fire that big plug out there, and you can give them the fire on it. But that's about, it's going to happen about once.
So you're saying you're getting a little bit of top water action?
No, a big crankbait.
Oh, big crankbait. Sorry, you said plug, and I was thinking like a popping plug or something.
Oh, a big crankbait, a big plug, like a 20-footer, something like a 10XD or, you know, a 6XD if you're throwing a little shallow ledge.
I got you. I got you. Talk to me a little bit. I think you were saying earlier off air that there was a little bit of a shallow bite too going on.
There is. They've actually left the water level pretty high for us right now, and there is a pretty good little frog bite going on around bluegill beds.
Okay.
Anywhere you can graph and look on your lower hat to find the bluegill bed, throwing a frog on it and running over them. Running through a bunch of them is the way you're catching a bunch of the bigger fish, but you have to have a bunch of them marked, and you have to be prepared for not too many bites, but your quality, it will go up a little bit when you do get a bite.
Is that something you're having more luck with earlier in the day when it's cooler or later in the evening?
To be honest with you, my favorite time to run that is straight in the middle of the day.
Really?
It's the hottest part of the day. It tends to, in the morning and afternoon, you got more of the shade. It's cooler, obviously. They're more spread out around the banks. And then when it gets hot like that, they're sitting more around those bluegill beds because they're not wanting to go too far for food. They're just looking for something easy. So they'll set up right on them just during the hottest part. And then they'll kind of roam a little bit when it gets morning and afternoon. It just sets them up where they're more predictable where you need to throw.
I got you. I got you. I wouldn't have figured that. I would have just intuited that if you were sitting there fishing shallower over a bluegill bed, I would have figured that that would have been more active early in the morning. But yeah, I guess, with some shade, I can see that there being just more of them and them roaming more, right? Cooler temperatures.
That's the reason, like throwing that frog or prop bait or anything like that. When that sun gets high and you're throwing it on shade lines or anything like that, because most of the bluegill beds, when they'll spawn when you follow, if you grab by them, you're going to see some kind of log or something down there that their bluegill are spawning around. And that's just what the bass go sit on when that sun gets up.
Gotcha. You mentioned prop bait. So me and a buddy, we were fishing the other day and we started out throwing some whopper ploppers. If you got a particular prop bait that you really enjoy fishing?
I've got one that a guy up in Virginia, he made them probably 7 or 8 years ago, and he actually got sick, and he called me before he was like, when he started hitting, he said, how many do you want? Because I ain't going to be making these anymore. I got him to send me like 30 of them. And it's just, I mean, it's to give everybody kind of a reference. It looks kind of like a Brian's bead, but it's just a handmade wood prop bait.
That's cool. The handmade baits are awesome. I got a friend and her dad has a collection of old handmade lures or like old, you know, just older lures, you know, like it'll be an Arbogast jitterbug or something, but made when they first started making them. And there's that that's cool. There's just as somebody who ties a few flies here and there, I can appreciate a handmade bait. There's some mojo to it that you don't get off the shelf at Bass Pro.
No, this is by far the best prop bait I've ever thrown. Like, I've thrown like a couple of the other brands, and you'll buy like three or four, and you'll have one that sounds right. His, like, every one of them sounds right. And his price on them was cheaper than most of the ones you'll go to Tackle Warehouse or anywhere else to buy. But if I can suggest anybody, if they get in, I'm not talking Wobble Flopper style baits. I'm talking about like a double prop. Even the old Devil's Horses, they were made out of wood. If you can get in and stay away from the plastic ones, you will get more bites on the wood one. They just sound better. They just got the right action up there to catch them.
I wonder too if that has to do, because like I've noticed that with like popping bugs, like you'll do better on a cork or a balsa wood bug, and you know, tine flies, topwater flies, a lot of people want a really buoyant something that sits up high, right? And you got some of these lures that are the hollow plastic. And I almost wonder sometimes if they don't sit too high. Like you get a wooden plug and they're buoyant, but I feel like they ride lower, and maybe that's a little bit different.
Float different, right?
Yeah.
They just float different. And that wood, I mean, just like anything else, that wood's got a different action than plastic.
Yeah. Tying flies, I started tying mine and putting them in a bowl of water clear. And instead of looking at them from the top, I think a lot of people, you know, forget, like if you're looking at a bait, a lot of times you look at how it's painted up top, what it looks like on top, or you're fishing it and you're looking down at it, but the fish has got the opposite view. Like a lot of those really intricately painted lures, topwater lures, you look at them from the bottom and all it is a white belly and maybe, you know, some sort of red hot spot or something.
You're correct. All that paint does on top water, on the top of the bait, is to catch fish. Then they gotta have this and that, but all you really need is one that's got a white bottom, one that's got like a mustard bottom, and one that's got like a tangerine orange bottom. That's it.
Yeah.
You can do anything else you want to do, but those are the three main ones.
What are your thoughts on a topwater bait? Like I enjoy fishing like a Rebel Pop R, and something that it does that I don't see on a lot of topwater lures, and maybe I'm just not looking hard enough, but they'll put on theirs, if you're familiar, like the rear hook, you have like tinsel and marabou. It's like a dressed treble hook.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that? You feel like that helps, hurts, doesn't make a difference?
It helps because if you look in the water, and especially the bluegill imitators, if you look in the water down in a bluegill, you're going to see chartreuse on the tail and fins and everywhere on that bluegill. So especially like bluegill shellcracker imitators, I do like the chartreuse feather trailer. Now, when it gets into more of your walking baits where you're catching them on schooling fish, I'm not going to say it matters quite as much. I've done better with it, and I've done better without it. It's kind of just something I play with. I think the feather on there on those walking baits, it does affect the action and the walk on that bait. So that's something you got to have a little bit of play with just to make sure that's walking right and how you want it to walk. Sometimes if you take it off, it'll make it have a wider walk. With it on there, it'll narrow that walk up a little bit. There's just something you got to play with on those. But if I'm throwing a prop bait, a pop or anything like that where it's a little bit slower, I do have a chartreuse feather trouble.
Yeah, I got to I've been fishing it lately and doing pretty good early in the morning, and it got me to thinking there's some top water baits that I may go back and since I got a fly tying vise and I know how to do that now, I may start dressing some of the hooks on that. And I've thought about playing with it just to kind of throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. I've thought about doing it with some crankbaits as well, just to add a little flash and a little extra movement to them.
That and on the crankbaits, they do have a treble hook that, I mean, I've caught them with some. I played with a little bit. And some plugs, they don't like it. It hurts the action on them, and they got a feather. I mean, not a feather, but a treble hook with a little blade on it that I have played with a little bit just to give it a little more flash down there.
Yeah, I feel like here our water down in the Delta is so muddy that anything you can do to add a little extra flash or a little extra noise, just something to help them key in on it is a big help.
And none of that ever hurts. It's good to play with.
There we go. Well, Clayton, you was talking earlier when we was doing our pregame warm-up, you mentioned something that's kind of interesting to me. You was talking about we got into it talking actually about your apparel company. I'm going to check out some of those hats that you got there, guys. If y'all are listening in, Clayton, remind me, what was the name of your apparel company? You got some pretty awesome hats out there.
Home Lake Apparel. That's kind of everybody has. you just got to show off your home lake. Well, as people coming to visit it, I've got Eufaula, Seminole, Blackshear, Sinclair, Oconee. I've got about eight different lakes, West Point. I've got about eight different lakes I do. I just started this probably three and a half months ago, and I'm in probably 25 to 30 stores right now, but I'm always looking for more retailers. That's the big thing. I've been stocking hats today, and I'm going to go. I got guide trips tomorrow, and then Thursday I'll be down at Seminole stocking hats. So if anybody's listening and they want some hats, let me know.
There we go. Yeah, we'll definitely be interested. You gonna expand to the west and cover more of the Alabama lakes?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I had to start out with just around here, and I'm kind of venturing more that way. Seminole, this will be my first trip to Seminole Thursday to get them in down there. Then I might head up like Lake Martin, or it's just not too far from where I live. And then I'll kind of keep venturing over and over. But if somebody happens to be listening, they got a store and they live on a lake, I can get it done. We just have to work on shipping.
There we go. Yeah, definitely. If you get you a Lake Martin hat, I'll put me down for one. I enjoy going up there and fishing from time to time. Me and a buddy try to make that trip at least once a year. But no, I bring that up because we were talking about that, and you have a Flint River hat, and we were talking a little bit about a shoal bass, and you was talking about getting up there and fishing for them. So I've caught a lot of bass species. I've caught four of the different red-eye bass. I've caught largemouth, spotted bass. And then you got your Alabama bass and your Choctaw bass. But do you do a lot of fishing for shoal bass? Or is that something you're familiar with?
Oh, I do a good bit of it. I got the Flint is all around where I live. I can be on the Flint in 10 minutes in about 4 to 5 different directions from my house, put in different ramps. That's going to be, I got a little behind with this apparel gig and starting it, and then I've been busy on Eufaula, but I'm looking for a jet boat right now where I can start guiding for shoal bass in the Flint, just so where everybody else can experience. I mean, it's a beautiful scenic drift when you're going down the river, kind of like fishing like when you were growing up. There's no houses on it. It's all just beautiful, clear water when it's not raining. It's muddy right now, but there's only certain times of the year where you can make that float and you're going to be able to fish for them. So you have to really plan that and plan it by ear with the rain. You want it, that river to be low, slow, and clear. That's where that jet boat comes in.
Well, talk to me a little bit. What's the secret to catching shoal bass? How does that differ from fishing? I know it's completely different. Like my boss just recently did a trip for shoal bass further up on the Chattahoochee, I think north of Atlanta. I've done some fishing for red eye bass in the shoals, but is there any go-to secret strategies you got for catching shoal bass?
You mean, to be honest with you, you gotta have the boat to get to them because they bite. That's it. The key to it is having the right boat to get to them. So if you got the boat where you can run, you know, 3 or 4 inches of water, get up in them shoals and bang around them rocks, you're gonna catch them.
Yeah, that's my experience is that river fish like that are just hungry. Like there's not much to
track. They bite.
Like, yeah, they are ready to play ball with you. So that's good to hear.
One thing good about them is these shoal bass and the rivers, they don't have the pressure that a bunch of these lake fish have. I mean, they're pretty much, they hadn't seen that many baits. And they're ready to bite, and it's just fun, that current.
Yeah, it's definitely different, but it's pretty. And like you said, it's like fishing when you was a kid. You know, if you get out there and you do a little wade fishing or go downstream in a little canoe, it really surprised me. We went fishing for red eye bass with Roy Guevara a while back. And, you know, we were sitting there in the middle of the day and it was super hot, you know, triple digits. And you still, if you could find a little bit of shade where I guess the sunlight wasn't hurting their eyeballs up shallow, I mean, we were reliably catching them on topwater. And that's all I fished all day was just a topwater fly. And to be able to fish topwater 12 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon in the deep south in the middle of summer was just wild to me. Like, pile of fun.
You can catch them on anything. We catch them on topwaters, buzz baits, spinner baits, jerk baits. It's big. I mean, like a shoal bass, he'll bite. I mean, like the biggest swim bait you're going to throw, he'll come up and choke it. You see it come out and eat it, and it's fun.
Sounds like a good time. Well, Clayton, I enjoy talking to you. It's good information. At some point, I'll have to get out there with you If you get that jet boat, definitely let me know. I want to sign up and be your first customer. But if folks want to get with you for a fishing trip, where's a good place to look you up?
Yeah, just you look me up on Facebook, like you follow Fishing Guy Clayton Batts, or either just give me a call, 334-310-8338.
There we go. You guys go check him out, Clayton. I appreciate you. Have a good rest of your evening.
Yes, sir, you too.
This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by. Alrighty, guys, next up we got Dip McMillan reporting in from my home turf down here on the Mobile Tensaw Delta. Dip, how you doing this evening?
Doing pretty good, Nick. How about you, buddy?
Man, I'm doing pretty good, man. The sun's going down, starting to cool off. I got some dinner in me, had a productive day at work. So week's been it's been going okay, man. How about y'all?
Man, just dealing with the heat, man. Dealing with the heat. We had a rain shower this evening. I was in Walmart, and me and the other guy from work just trying to get stuff, trying to get a head up on the kids tournament, purchasing a lot of good prizes and stuff, and came in the bad rain shower down here in Robertsdale, but turned out to be a beautiful evening so far.
That's good. That's good. I know, man. Talking about hot, there is no hot like the hot when you get them little 30-minute rain showers to hit that blacktop parking lot. Like, there's no hot like just after a rain in summertime in a big Walmart parking lot.
Oh, tell me about
Something about that black asphalt steaming. Oh, just that smell
I'm
and that
telling you, man.
humidity is just making me hot just sitting here in the air conditioning, just thinking about it. Well, tell me, you mentioned that y'all were getting some stuff for the tournament. Fill us in on that. That's coming up here on the 10th, right? So not this weekend, but the next. Is that right?
Next Saturday, August the 10th, will be our annual, this year will be our 7th year Dippy Outdoors kids crappie tournament at Hubbard's Landing. And we've just been overwhelming with the last 2 weeks, especially last week and this week. It's just been unreal with all the support from the community, from both sides of the bay, from Mobile, Baldwin County, Emerson, Jay, Florida, and Pensacola areas, and North Alabama. People just reaching out with us with donations, man. Just send them on my front porch or mail them to my P.O. box. I'm speechless right now, man. Never would I thought that we would reach 100 sponsors. And when I get done filling out tonight, I think we're going to reach 100 sponsors. If not, it's going to be close. I just give God all the glory, man. And I thank the community from just standing behind us and supporting these kids, man. The kids is our future. That's my biggest motto. The kids are our future, and that's what we got to do, man. And like I said again, I keep saying it. I can't thank the good Lord and the community for all the support.
Yeah, that is awesome, man. And it's not to dive into the weeds too deep, but man, as fragmented as the world is right now, like every time you get an election coming down the pipeline, people go at each other. But it's good to see that you can get that much support for a kids' fishing tournament. Like that right there gives me hope for the world, makes me think that maybe we're gonna be all right after all.
Oh yeah, we'll be fine, man. We're some good people in this world, man. And they have been just pouring the love for these kids, man. Nick, I can go on and on about it, man. Just, we had a term this past weekend, man. People just walking up to me and saying, how can we donate? How can we donate? What all you need? It's just been overwhelming, man. It's like I said, and you know, I thank you and a lot of others for just promoting us, man, getting the word out there, man.
Yeah, man, it's a that's awesome. And I mean, it's great because for me, I mean, I was just up there the other day. I launched here at my neighbor's and I rode up to Hubbard. So, I mean, when I say it's my home waters, like it's really my home waters. And that's awesome. The idea of getting that many kids out there experiencing something that I got to experience as a kid. And I tell you what, man, just as a dad, like I'm looking forward to it. Kiddos growing. And, you know, we've had her out on the boat a few times, but like I'm itching. I keep putting it off, but I'm itching to get her that first fishing rod and take her out
That's
and
awesome.
try to get her to cast it. Cause man, I think sometimes like, I mean, fishing literally changed my whole life. Like where I live, who I married, like the vacations I take, the job I took, like all that looks different if I hadn't gone fishing as a kid. So. You're
Man,
making
that's
a
awesome.
big im yeah, you're making a big impact in lives, and that's something that I know I speak for the whole community when I say that we really appreciate you doing that. So you was talking about the tournament y'all had last weekend. So I don't know if I told you, but I fished my first kayak bass fishing tournament. I went down there with Justin Dunham and David Meeks and all the guys at Mobtown. And Man, it hurt my feelings because I felt real good about it, Dip. I had me a spot and I pre-fished it and I caught some good fish. And I said, I think I can be competitive up in here. Me and the neighbor fished it together. We fished it and we were patting each other on the back, saying, "Oh yeah, we're gonna do good. We're gonna show up strong." And we had, man, all that rain and that water come up and it got high and it got muddy, and we got to our spot and the water was up 2 or 3 feet from where it
Yep.
was, and just completely different. As soon as I saw it, I'm like, man, this is going to be a long day. And I'd feel bad saying I fished all day and got skunked, but I think it was about half the guys in the tournament got skunked. So everybody was struggling, at least in the bass fishing world. Did you guys do any better crappie fishing, or how did that work?
Well, it's the same thing. We had several guys that didn't weigh in a fish. And then, I mean, we're talking about some guys that know that pencil in the back of their head, got 10 grand worth of electronics on their boat. That's what I'm telling people. I don't care if you got live scope and all that, you still got to put a fish in a live well. And this weekend was a big, that was a big deal, because when you can look at the fish and just know they ain't hungry and ain't gonna bite, that will make you frustrated. And this, like you said, this weekend was terrible. Probably one of the worst weekends where I have seen that on the tensaw, that the fishing just been down for everybody. And I'm gonna tell you the problem, what I think it was. Like you said, but I think we got more than 3 foot. I think we got about 4 foot. A bear steam plant was off this weekend, big time.
Yeah.
I think we got about 3.5 foot of rise, probably knocking four.
So it's I hate to interrupt you, but it's funny that you say that, because I looked at it at the boat ramp and I said, man, like Barry says, it's come up 2 foot. And my neighbor, he looked at me, he said, that's more than 2 foot. And that's exactly what he said. He said, that's 4 foot of water that come up. So it's funny to hear you say that
Absolutely.
too. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I've been fishing these rivers all my life, and I look at Bear religiously.
Yeah.
Bear's steam plant, last year they got it fixed, but now it's back off. It's back off again about 2 foot. And when I looked at Harper's Landing Pier Saturday morning, I told them guys, I said, man, y'all better bring your A game. It ain't right. And then when I got on the water and seen the willow fly hatch in the shad spawn, that shad spawn was just incredible from the mobile side, the until the all on the tensaw. And I told them, I said, man, it's gonna be a bad day for fishing, especially for crappie. You can see them crappie just hold mouth open, man. They wouldn't bite nothing, man. They fooled. They ate all night on willow flies and shad. It was a tremendous shad spawn, billions. So you can't compete with that, man. Plus, like I said, a 4 foot rise on the water. It was terrible for us, man. Our winner was Matt Whittle. He weighed in at 4 pounds, and he's a good fisherman. He know that tensaw good. 4 pounds. 4 pounds won our crappie tournament on tensaw. So that should tell you something. Tensaw ain't got huge fish like the Mobile, the Bama, and the Tongue big fish, but we had at Hubbard's Landing some 8.5 pound bags. And 4 pounds, man, that's a tough day with seven fish.
Yeah, and I didn't know. I'm not as in tune with it as you. We did have two guys who did. I think one guy, the guy who won, I think caught like 74 inches of fish. They do, the kayak tournaments, they do inches instead of trying to get you to, you can't put them in a live well and bring them back to the ramp and weigh them. So, that's pretty good. We had two guys who did real well. We had a handful of guys who caught fish, but like you said, like I'm not a I don't consider myself to be a super serious angler. I'm not real good at it, but man, I've lived here my whole life, and I fish some waters here close to my house where, I'll go fish every day for a couple weeks at a time. I fished a little creek that I fished growing up that I've been fishing for, almost 20 years. So it's like I felt like I knew the water, knew where the fish were supposed to be. And that's what I was just thinking. Like, didn't have electronics on the kayak, so I didn't know. It's like, well, man, or did it just push them out of here, or am I just sitting there bouncing a bait past them and not getting them to bite? But
No.
you're saying that you were watching them just refuse an offering.
Some areas we was watching them, and some areas they was gone, Nick. Some areas of my honey holes, man. I'm talking about you go there, they like it's. I mean, that's where they at year round. I mean, it's like clockwork. That's why I take kids and stuff too. They wasn't there. And some spots, the few that was there, at some areas, they wasn't biting, man. I mean, they were just there, let you bait and go the other way. Boom. I mean, they got shad all in their eyeballs and willow flies coming down. I mean, them fish wasn't hungry at all.
So let me ask you. So it was really, you know, this was, like I said, my first tournament, and it got me to thinking. So, you know, I'm kind of a fair weather angler. You know, there's some mornings when I wake up or I go to bed the night before and I look at the weather and you're just like, man, this is a good time to go fish. Like, I like the way the water looks. I like the way the weather's doing. I got some buddies that been catching some fish. And, you know, when I went in pre-fish, that's how it was. Like, the water conditions were stable. It was clear. There were fish to be had. But then you get a tournament, and I got to thinking, like, man, if you did that a lot, you'd definitely get better at fishing, because it breaks you, yep, that habit of just going out there when you're like, oh yeah, this is a good day. Any fool can catch fish. I'm gonna go fish and have a good time.
Absolutely.
So you've got way more experience with it than I do. Down here on the Mobile Tensaw Delta, like, what do? Like, when you go out there and you got a tournament and you just know, like, soon as you get out there and you look at it and you go, oh man, this is gonna be rough. What's your strategy to go out there?
Go for what you know, man, and just grind. It's gonna be a slow day. Me in particular, I'm looking, if I know it's gonna be a slow day, I do a little method that I got a secret to, and I know I try to get me about 6 or 7 good bites. I put them on. I'm a spider rig. If it's gonna be a slow day, I mean, I'm a spider rig guy, and I'm definitely going to spider rig them. On two of my poles, I'm going to put some big baits on there and just hope for the best and just grind. You're looking for 7 good bites, hopefully 6. You get just 5 or 6 and 2 average fish, you're going to be in the top 5. But like Saturday, man, it was a grind. I wasn't in the tournament, but I did fish some areas trying to get some eaters for a cookout we got coming up. And now, like I said, that morning was horrible for us. We probably kept 12 fish. Now, on the evening side, and everything started to come down, and that tide finally started pushing that water up out of there. Now, me and my girl, my little girl now, we went in. I tell you where I went. It's no secret. I went in Douglas. And let me tell you, we didn't catch no giants, but we probably caught 30, 35 crappies of 9 to 11 inch, and they had a ball doing it. Watching that cork go down, they had a ball. Caught them until we got tired, but that was a big change in the water.
Yeah, so that's something that I was kind of hoping. The tournament only went till 1:30, and I remember thinking right there at 5:30 in the morning when I first started fishing, was like, man, like, I wonder how quick it'll go down, you know. And I didn't fish, yeah, any that evening, but I can tell you, we fished Saturday, and then Monday morning I went fishing just for fun before work, and was right back to catching fish. You know, went to the same spot that I'd wanted to fish on the tournament, the place that I'd pre-fished, went up in there, caught a mixed bag, caught some pickerel, caught some bass, caught some of everything, you know, and it was just completely different. So, we had this conversation a while back with Wayne Miller. Like, it changes quick. We get so much rain, but then it drains, yep, out so fast, you know, depending on what the tide's doing. And,
yep,
it really, Saturday really hammered home to me just what a crazy fishery this is and how fast stuff can change.
It is. That's what I'm telling you, man. It's not no lake that you can just go in there and just catch hundreds and hundreds. And I mean, it's a river system down here. Got a tide, got high water. You got to bring your A game. I mean, that's what makes it so fun. I mean, it's a challenge, and I love a challenge. That's why I love the Tensaw, I love the Mobile, I love the Alabama River, I love the Tombigbee. I mean, it's a challenge.
Absolutely. Well, tell me what you think. Do you think that it's going to be – I'm hoping it's going to be easier for the kids' tournament, because, man, that would have been rough to throw a kid into last weekend. What do you think? Like, do you think we're going to stick on that weather pattern? Like, I know summertime you get them pop-up thunderstorms all the time. I haven't really had a chance to pull up barrier. We kind of back to normal. Like, do you think we'll have some good conditions this weekend?
I think we will. Kids tournament next weekend, and we don't get no storms or nothing like that, nothing crazy, I think we'll be fine. Then that shad spawn going to be gone too. If the water, just like I said again, we can't control the water, but hopefully that water don't jump up tremendously like it did last weekend. I think the kids' tournament are going to be fine. Last year during this time of the year, them kids waiting in some good fish, Nick. I'm talking about pound and a half fish, and a lot of kids waiting in fish. Almost 90% of all our kids that fish went by boat, brought a fish into the scale. So we had a good turnout on that, and I think next weekend should be the same thing too. I think everybody have an opportunity to catch a fish, whether it's a crappie or a bass, a catfish or a garfish. I think gonna be a lot of kids that catch a lot of fish and bring them to the scale.
Well, that's definitely what we want to hear. Tell me, is there still time to sign up if folks are here and they want to fish that kids tournament? Is there still time to sign up? And if so, where do they go to do that?
Yeah, the sign up is only on that Saturday from daylight. I'll be there. I'll be standing up there. I'll be there checking boats in at 4 o'clock. You got a lot of competitive teams, kids team. They get there early. So all the sign ups is going to be on Saturday morning from 4 a.m. until 11 a.m. We stop it at 11 a.m. That's when the deadline is, and all the kids going to be coming back. And we'll be getting weigh-in started about 11:15. So all, like I've been posting on my Dippy Outdoor page, all the sign-up, that we don't do early sign-up. They start the morning of the tournament, which is August the 10th at 4 a.m. at Hubbard's Landing. We'll be out there in front of the lunch with a table set up, and we'll give the kids a lanyard with a number on it. And that's what it'll take to the weigh-in. And that's where they also – that's where they take to lunch to get his or her food, and to the snow cone machine. So that lanyard is very important. But we'll go over that the morning of the tournament.
And I tell you what, you had me at snow cone machine. I think it's been a while since I've had a good snow cone. Well, Dip, I always appreciate you coming on the show. Really appreciate what you do with the kids tournament. Yeah, if folks want to find out more information, you said they can go to the Dippy Outdoors Facebook page.
Yes, sir. Go to Dippy Outdoor Facebook page. We've been posting on there daily. Matter of fact, we did a lot of shopping today. I'm about to post some more awesome prizes on there from my great sponsors. You can also reach me at Dip McMillan on my personal page, and my phone number is on both of my pages. So any question, they can get to me on there on social media, or just call me or text me on my cell phone.
There we go, guys. If y'all are looking for a good family-friendly event this weekend, y'all definitely be sure to check out that Dippy Outdoors tournament. Dip, as always, I appreciate you, sir.
All right, Nick. Appreciate you, man.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Bucks Island. Is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Alrighty, guys, rounding out this week, we're going to swing up north to the Tennessee River. We got Andy Witten here to tell us what's going on. Andy, how about it?
Man, not a whole lot. It's getting really good right now. It's topwater bugs, man. It's terrestrials, hoppers. Getting good. It's my favorite time of the year, man.
Yeah, I tell you what, this morning I was out on the Delta, and I was just telling you off air, like, I was out there throwing popars for chain pickerel. And then I stopped on the way back. I was paddling back to the house, and I watched a grasshopper fall out of a tree. And I stopped paddling to watch him. And he was about 6 inches from safety before a big old bluegill come up, smoked him. And
got him.
It was all I could do to just be like, no, I got work. I got to go back to the house.
Yeah, I'm having that second round of cicadas right now.
Really?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I started noticing pretty heavy, and then now they're kind of thinning out, but I seen one this morning getting out of the car.
Man, down here, I know that's a thing, you know, they talk about the cicada apocalypse this year, but we get them every year, and I forget about them. I tune them out, but I'll go back and watch a fishing video or something that I recorded, and you just hear them in the background constantly. And I've had people call on the telephone, and I'll be out on my back porch in the evening chatting, and they'll be like, dude, what is that noise in the background? Like, you got bad signal or like standing under a power transformer or something? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I don't, because I live here full time on the water, and I just, you get to a certain point where I guess it's like people that live next to an airport or a train track or something. They're watching TV and a jet's flying overhead, shaking the house, and they don't even look.
That's how it is here, man. I tune them out like you. I noticed them a lot more, you know, when we had that first big cicada apocalypse deal, you know, and the broods. And
Yeah.
then now I don't really notice them. But I noticed that one this morning laying by the car.
Yeah, I'm actually looking when we started talking about them. I rolled my chair over and I'm looking out on my back porch, and I got two caissons hanging up on my piling from my porch. So they're definitely coming here. But you know, I've never really thrown, like, I know that that's been a trendy thing this year, people tying and buying the big orange and black cicada topwaters. I just haven't fished one, and I can't tell you why, other than just I guess I ain't got enough time to throw everything that interests me.
I'm the same way, man. I tied up some cicada flies for a fellow out of Georgia, and he fished them, and had a lot of luck with I think it was Bartram's bass and some trout on them. But I tied them for everybody else, and I never did fish one of them. I guess I'm stuck in my ways on what I want when I want it, you know. So, which I fished some other things that probably the fish probably, you know, looks like a cicada or something like that. I fish that frog from John Lower all the time, and it probably counts as the same thing to them. They just know it's a big round thing sitting on top of the water twitching.
That's it, man. Every topwater lure or fly that I've ever looked at, I don't know how much they imitate anything other than just something splashing on the surface, aggravating fish.
That's it.
Well, talk to me a little bit. So I'm excited. I'm gonna get to go up this weekend. I'm gonna go chase some shoal bass, and I know you got smallmouth bass up there, but from what I hear, they're similar. So I'm looking for primers. What are the smallmouth doing up there on the Tennessee River?
No, man, it's still binging bait fish. If I went on a bait fish pattern, I've been seeing a ton of frogs, like on gravel bars and everything else. There's tons of small frogs running around. Like I said, the hoppers and everything are starting to move around. I've been throwing a Sam's One Bug a whole lot, especially on like the smaller creeks. And so it's so skinny right now, man. It's clear water and it's skinny. It's you got to be very subtle with everything, or they run off. But it's been long leaders and Sam's One Bugs mainly for me here lately.
Tell me a little bit.
And
I know the Sam's One Bug is super popular, and I've actually had not the guy who invented him. I always forget his name. I think Wade Blevins, not Sam, but Wade Blevins. I've had him on the podcast,
yeah.
and I've fished Sam's One Bugs, and I actually finally started tying them. And you know, I don't know about you, but like when I start tying a pattern myself, I start looking at them more critically. Like you just kind of pay more attention. When you tie yours, do you tie yours thick with a lot of marabou? Like, how do you, what's, I know everybody puts their own spin on them. When I started really digging in on social media, what's your preference on a one bug?
My preference, man, is I like the skinnier ones with a little bit less marabou. More or less, it's a little foam cylinder with long legs. To me, the marabou, I don't want a whole lot of marabou off the back, but I actually don't even tie Sam's One Bugs. I've got some from Wade, and I've got some from my buddy Paul Terry. He ties me up a lot and brings them to me or sends them to me. That's my Sam's One guy there.
I got you. That's what I need. I need somebody to tie for me so I can spend more time fishing
That's exactly how I do
them.
it. I've got a spawn order in right now. It's just sitting in my cart. It's everything for Sam's One Bug. I just haven't bought it yet. But
I think most of the fly fishing websites out there, Mad River, JStocker, Orvis, I think I could pull up any of those right now, and I got stuff sitting in a cart just waiting for me to feel like pressing go on it.
that's it, man. That's how I am. I'll get on one site and go to buy something. I'm like, oh, wait. Why is it so expensive? And I look, and I'm like, oh, there's a whole nother order there that I never hit go on.
That's it. Or sometimes I'll get a package in the mail, and my wife will be like, "Hey, you got this fly stein stuff come in," and I'll be looking at it, and I'll be like, what did I order them hooks for? Like,
Yeah. What
What
was
was that
that
for?
for?
Like, I'll have ordered a pack of hooks to try a new fly, and then I get it in, and by the time I get it, I'm like, I don't know why I ordered more of those, but I guess in the drawer they go.
It's me, man. That's what's here lately. I've been trying my hand at trout flies.
Really?
Yeah.
I like to tie a lot of the trout flies just because I feel like bluegill are not that picky. And I tie my fair share of, sponge spiders and little small poppers and stuff like that. But, sometimes I'll try a little Catskill dry or something like that just because I feel like that's kind of a rite of passage. There's kind of some tradition and heritage in some of them old patterns,
That's how I am, and I just got into it because, well, me and my wife, I went to Georgia a few weeks ago on a trip, and fished for some red eyes and some bass, and then I went after some brown trout. I really wanted brown trout, so then I ended up not finding any, but it kind of got me into the world of trout flies now. So, and I got a ton of stuff here, man, that a buddy had brought over here and left here, and his tackle box is full of trout stuff, man. So I've just been picking into it a little bit. But I got a guy, my father-in-law's buddy. He's going to Alaska at the end of August. He's going in for some grayling. So I've been tying him some grayling flies.
Nice. We're in the middle of publishing a three-part series of articles on fishing the Kenai Peninsula, and
Nice.
then I've got a sister-in-law who just moved out west, and there I can't remember the name of it, but they're sandwiched between two major salmon fishing rivers. So yeah, I've been reading up on that a little bit, looking into different salmon rods, been looking at getting me an 8 or a 9 weight. And definitely, I enjoy doing the warm water thing, but yeah, branching out, doing the trout, or going out west and going up north and trying some of the salmon and stuff like that, grayling, like you said. I guess it's always the grass is greener, right? You got the guys out there who want to come down here and catch, snook and bonefish and stuff like that, but you always want what you don't have close.
That's true, man. That's how it goes. That's exactly how it goes.
Yeah. Well, what's been, you got any particular trout fly that's been speaking to you that you've been tying?
I like them parachute atoms. I like tying them. I don't know why. It's kind of tricky, but it's kind of easy too at the same time. So it's I like trying it.
And I tell you,
That and some nymphs. I like tying nymphs.
So fishing, doing my little road trip trying to fish every county in Alabama, I can tell you there's been some days where just to hurry it up, move it along, get to the next county. If you're pressed for time trying to do 4 or 5 counties in a day, I can tell you that a parachute Adams has saved me a lot.
I've caught smallmouth on parachutes before.
So I had a witness for it, but I had like a little bitty size 20 parachute Adams. And this was, I think it was Dallas County. A buddy was driving up with me. We were going to go do an SOA dove hunt. And I was like, hey, do you mind if on the drive up there, if I pull over at a couple of bridges and just fish for a few minutes? And he said, yeah, I don't care. He said, we'll leave a little early. So we pulled over and he got out to stretch his legs and he was just watching me. And I put like a little bitty size 20 parachute Adams in this little creek. And it was clear enough I could see him. Like I cast, first cast, and this bass just eased out from under some grass that was kind of growing up on the bank. And he just eased out and he looked at that fly and it was just a little tinkara rod that I'd brought that I could just throw in the dash. And I mean it was like a 2 pound bass ate that little size 20 fly, just sipped it, just barely took it off the water. And I swear it took me 5 minutes to get him on. Like I just had some little 6 pound tippet and like no reel to fight him on anything. It was really eye-opening though. Like I think about it all the time now, how many bass in them little small streams are just eating bugs,
Oh man, it's crazy. But it's like me and my wife, we do a lot of arrowhead hunting and stuff. Lots of the creek that we got. And I was flipping rocks over the other day looking for arrowheads, and it was crazy at the stoneflies and stuff I was seeing and all the little bugs in there that you don't think about. And then you end up going down there and you don't see any hoppers or nothing like that. And you flip over a rock and there's all kinds of little stuff in there that's easy on.
That's it. And it got me thinking about it, like I'll eat a ribeye for sure, but I'll eat M&M, or now
That's
that I got
true.
a kid, I'll eat that random goldfish that got left on the couch. I'll eat it.
That
Low effort, may as well.
is true. I never thought about it like that. It's wild though, man, because when I first got into fly fishing, it was like, oh, big streamers cannot throw, you know, because I was used to throwing flukes and all this and spinner baits and all that, you know. And then I was like, I'm not really having a whole lot of luck on these big streamers, you know. And then I, like I said, that purple woolly booger the other day, man, I was walking a creek the other day and I threw it through that purple crystal booger in there, snagged a smallmouth, took it off the hook, throwed it in the hole, snagged another one. I just put the hook on my rod and I was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm satisfied.
That's it. Now I've got a talking about having a card. I'm pretty sure I got one somewhere where I've got some purple flash marabou, and some purple chenille, and some beads. I really want to give a try that. You sent me some pictures last time we talked. That little purple bugger that you had, just a real simple fly, and looked really good. And I was like, you know, that'd be easy to tie up a dozen and just have, you know.
In no time, no time, man. It's and plus, you know, I'll tie six of them up for me at the beginning of the fishing season, and you know, I still got them, they're still in my box. It's a tough little fly, man.
That's it. I like how you tie them. Like, you got enough marabou on them that you can lose a little bit of marabou and the fly still looks good. And then the way you were tying them, no, there's no hackle to come undone or anything. Like, that's one of them flies. It looks like if you wanted to cheat, you could put a little super glue on that shank before you wrap that chenille and just be like, there, tear that up.
It's on there, boy. They'll break the hook before they break it off. Break off the chenille and all that, you know. And that's like the hackle thing, man. I quit doing the hackle thing a long time ago. I strictly use this, it's a cactus chenille. It's let me see. I can tell you right now, it's hairline cactus chenille, medium purple. No, that's all I use.
That's some good stuff. That's talking about tying like little bluegill flies and stuff like that. Like, yeah, I tie some little size 12 and size 14. Really that small to me. It's not really even a woolly bugger, but real similar to what you're tying. I tie them with and without a bead, or sometimes I'll wrap the shank with some lead wire. But yeah, especially with a bluegill fly, man, where you catch 100 fish on the same fly. But I started doing it. I'd tie the hackle on, and the hackle would come loose, and instead of tying on a new fly, I just ripped the hackle off, and it caught fish just as well. So finally, I was like, well, the hackle looks good, like, but apparently to the fish, they don't care that much about it. So why tie it if it's just gonna come off anyway?
That's it, man. Though it's like they'll eat a crawfish with one claw or two claws. They don't care. It's crawfish.
That's it. Sometimes that's like I was fishing with Ro El Guevara a while back, and I was we were sitting there fishing. I had a Sam's one bug he'd give me tied on, and I just noticed one of the legs had come undone. One leg was way longer than the other. I said, oh, that's why I'm not catching any fish. I said, the legs is all cattywampus. He said, man, let me see that thing. And he looked at it. He said, that's about halfway right. He said, you need to catch about 20 more fish on that thing before it's really performing at its optimum. They need to be chewed on a little bit.
That's all I like. I mean, them Sam's one bugs with them long legs, man. It looks funky.
Have you ever tied? I was looking at a lino bug, and I started tying those, and then I started tying one
Yeah,
just to just
Lano bugs.
yeah,
Yeah,
lino
so.
bugs. Yeah, so just to be silly, we have down here. I don't know if y'all get them up that far north, but we got the Port of Mobile was actually like ground zero for the banana spider invasion. I think technically it's a golden silkworm weaver, but I started tying them up to match that color pattern, you know, with a little of the blue, a little of the orange, a little of the black and yellow. And that's a goofy looking fly that catches fish good
So,
down here.
funny thing about the Lano bug, man. I got a buddy that I met through work, and we started fishing together, you know. And he didn't want to touch a fly rod, didn't want to do it. And I finally one day for his birthday, I just broke down at work one day, and I said, "Hey, man, you got a package coming to your house this week." And I bought him, I sent him a fly rod, right? And I was telling him about, you know, fishing foam bugs and all this. Well, he ties up this Lano bug, and I'd never heard of it. Never heard of it. And then me and him and Paul Terry went fishing one day, and it was Paul in front, me in the middle, and him in the back. And he was like, "Man, I'll stay in the back because I'm gonna be in the trees and everything else." Well, he was picking up fish that me and Paul was missing on the Lano bug. And we got to this deep hole, and I told him, I was like, "Man, there's always a fish in this hole. Always." And Paul fished it, no good. I fished it, no good. I'm walking out through there, and I hear this huge splash, and I look back, and there's this big old smallmouth coming out of the water. on Brock's lano bug, and it broke him off. And I told him, I said, "Man, I need you to tell me about three or four of them lano bugs."
Yeah, that's a that was one of those flies. Like I saw the design and I said, "Well, that looks easy." Like I think I got everything sitting in the desk that I need to tie that. So I just kind of whipped one up and dropped it in a Pyrex bowl of water. And man, what I like about it so much is it's real clean on the back end where the hook is. Like you get a lot of hook there. It's easy to get a hook in a fish. And then they ride low. I just like the way that they ride. Like
I
to
do too,
me,
man. I like them a lot.
that's a thing to me with a Sam's One Bug, trying to tie it so that you get that hook down in the water. Like you see people using a wide gap hook or something. I like that you can just use whatever nymph hook you got handy, but you can get that hook down in the water and that insect looks drowned. And then when you get all them legs, like it's a good pontoon. Like they just sometimes with a one bug, I'll have trouble with one ride and a little cattywampus, you know, if you don't get that split perfect on that cylinder or whatever. But man, them lano bugs, they always ride just right. And then as a deer hunter, I'm just partial to anything you tie with a little deer hair on it. To me, that's got mojo.
Yep. It's got deer hair hanging on it. I like it.
That's it. That's just cool. Well, man, good talking to you. At some point, I swear I'm gonna get up there and we're gonna have to go catch some smallmouth and some rock bass together.
Come on, man.
I know you guide with Steven Rockhart's up there at Fly Fishing Alabama. If folks want to book a trip with you, where's a good place to get a hold of you?
Best place is either through like my Instagram or Facebook, which is just Andy Witten. And then you can reach out to Rockerts through Fly Fishing Alabama on Facebook, Instagram, or the we have a website too, just flyfishingalabama.com, and then you can just go down to there and you can hit contact and it'll get you a hold of us.
There we go, guys. If y'all want a good smallmouth guide up there on the Tennessee, y'all go check out Andy. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Visit Mississippi. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are lots of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails, and recreational sites, 25 parks, and wildlife management areas, too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, that's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Killer Dock. Killer Dock combines durability, function, and design to uniquely upgrade your entire dock experience. Visit killerdock.com to see more. Also by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rig or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com. Also brought to you by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or info@sepond.com. Also by L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoons to bigger bay and hybrid boats for the hardcore angler. You can visit them at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama, or give them a call at 251-937-1380.